Live from sunny Toronto, Ontario, Canada, home of the final date of 2018 Global Wars Tour, my name is Harley R. Padgett, and this is Talking Honor, the Pro Wrestling Torch podcast dedicated to Ring of Honor. I'm joined out of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the home of the latest set of ROH TV tapings, by Emily Fear.
Hi, Harley. How was your Sunday?
It was okay.
Oh, yeah? Did you do anything interesting?
I went to, like, this local event thing that was happening. It used to be this famous hockey arena. Now it's owned by a university, and it's weird because it's, like, the events take place over a grocery store. Essentially, like, people are shopping at their local Loblaws, picking up their groceries on a Sunday evening, not realizing that there are sweaty, half-naked men just above them, hitting each other with steel chairs.
Wow. If they only knew, they would put down the cabbage and just run up the steps.
I know. Maybe there's got to be some way to cross-promote that.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
Free, $25 gift card if you come to the local wrestling.
Or they should, like, do a show where that's, like, a theme in that does a themed match, like supermarket death match.
Yeah, Lost in the Supermarket, and, you have the Clash as the theme song, and basically, like, a cross between Supermarket Sweep and, like, Ring of Honor.
Yes, exactly. Oh, man, I would watch that show. I just want to watch a wrestling show in a supermarket now.
Ian Riccoboni said in some sort of interview that, like, being a game show host is his dream job. More than ROH.
I can totally see it. So, like, if he decides that wrestling is no longer his life calling, we gotta get him on. Like, he's gotta start somewhere. Probably, on a syndicated or maybe like a game show network game show that's just specifically game show network produced. Yeah,
just create more content for the Honor Club.
Yeah.
Like a spinoff game show. Rhett Titus's new character, perfect for game show.
Oh, we gotta talk about that.
He's like that. He'll be like the game show version of Vanna White.
I'm loving this more and more and more. You gotta put Colt in there somewhere, because if you don't have Colt like poking this like oily Rhett Titus, you don't really get the full effect.
And you have to have the boom boom sound effect during the show at some point.
Yes, absolutely.
All right, we'll workshop this and we'll bring it back to you in next week.
Okay.
So this past week was ROH's Global Wars Tour. 4 dates, 5 nights, 3 states and a province. We're not going to go into every single match on every single show because there's 35 to 40 matches total or something like that?
Yeah, a total of 12 hours of wrestling? Maybe 13 hours? Yeah,
half a day of just nonstop wrestling. So we'll look at the highlights maybe like our favorite match or two from each show and the big storyline developments, because we are heading towards Final Battle. By the time this podcast is in your ears, Final Battle is 1 month and 1 day away. Biggest pay-per-view of the year.
Yep, it's shaping up to be a good one if the TV taping and these shows are any indicator.
So Wednesday it kicked off with ROH's first event ever in Maine. I don't know anything about Maine. Give me the bullet points, librarian.
Maine is a...
Lobster?
Yeah, lobster is associated with Maine. It's lots of coastal area in Maine. It is apparently very scary if you read a lot of Stephen King.
Oh, because, all this stuff set there, right?
Yeah, basically, yeah. Like, it feels like either Americans are afraid of, like, the West or Southern Gothic, or they're afraid of Maine. But other than that, I don't really know that much about Maine. Mainers, Maine culture has its own, is a really very specific entity that, like, I've only really experienced from afar.
Well, so they did do some kind of horror stuff on the Maine show. They did a whole The Kingdom versus Dalton and the Boys.
Yeah.
And there was a segment where one of the boys got pulled into the ring and he came out in a Freddy Krueger sweater.
Loved it.
And, not Stephen King related, but horror related for the Maine fans.
Yeah, I like that they played with those tropes. I mean, it's, again, like you said, not Stephen King, but definitely I like anything that takes Vinny's Horror King shtick further than it ever goes, which... these days it's been, your, axe-wielding, balloon-floating, kind of routine. This was a nice, fun twist on it that, you know, gave us a reason to, like, get it, you know, more engaged with the shtick, with the gimmick.
You know what I just realized?
What?
It's been a long time since he popped a balloon in anybody's ear.
It has been.
We complained about that. We didn't like it, and it's gone. And that deserves some applause.
Oh, man, do we have that kind of power?
I feel like we weren't the only ones complaining. I think general consensus was in the cadence of wrestling fans, this is stupid.
Yes, and that would be absolutely 100% correct. But Brent transforming into a Freddy Krueger, a version of Freddy Krueger, complete with sweater and slashing hand, is stupid, but in the best way possible.
Yes, and Dalton in his best Dalton, crying out, what have you become?
Oh, yes. Being very concerned about the purity of his boys. Oh, so good. So great.
Yeah, so that was, for the entertainment aspect, that was one of my favorite matches from the Wednesday show.
Yeah, there were a lot of fun. Dalton was on fire with this tour in general. This was a great comeback tour for Dalton. Obviously, he's still banged up. He even admits that in ring, I think, like, either in Buffalo or in Toronto. But he just had so many great moments, both in ring and out of ring. In Toronto, he gets time on commentary. He was just on fire this entirety of Global Wars.
Yeah, it's so nice to have his character back.
Yes.
Even if he's not at 100% as a wrestler right now, just we missed his personality because it's so different from everybody else on the roster.
It is. We needed it. We really, really needed it. And he had found his ideal counterpart in the visiting Juice Robinson. It was so great to have two characters who do have like elements of flamboyance in their gimmicks, but wear them very differently. And I think that Juice offers enough of a difference in the way that he carries his flamboyance that like it works so great as counterpoints. They complement each other like perfectly well.
And I love when there's goofiness mixed into wrestling to an extent. Like it's not full comedy, but it's acknowledging because wrestling is weird, right? Mm-hmm. This is such a weird medium that these guys in like little trunks come out and settle every single problem, whether it's like the end of a friendship or whether it's an issue at catering. Every problem is solved by physically fighting each other, but not just any fight, like a fight where there's somebody to judge a winner and a loser. And like, you're not just trying to beat the person up. You're trying to like touch his shoulders to the ground for 3 seconds. Like it's so weird that it's fun when they acknowledge it.
Yeah. It's fun when they play with it. I think Ring of Honor, can sometimes, without even intending to, or perhaps, you know, because they are trying to kind of pay homage to their like more sportsmanlike roots, can sometimes veer on the over seriousness a little bit. You know, and I hate to complain about that because New Japan Pro Wrestling definitely goes for the more serious aspect of it. But it's nice to like embrace the lighthearted parts, especially if you're going to have a live, like a touring show like this. You've got almost four straight nights, you know, not quite consecutive, but four straight nights of touring. You need to let your guys have some fun with it. And also these are long shows. They all ran, I think, over 3 hours. So having levity in there is really important. Having things that the audience can engage with on multiple different ways is really important. So, So humor and Dalton Castle and gimmicks like that, like work really well in that way.
Well, what do you make of the new stable, Shinobi Shadow Squad?
Well, it's getting me more screen time for ROH's most adorable puppy in the puppy pile, which in this particular puppy pile, he is still, you know, the most adorable one of, certainly.
Yeah, I mean, we'd already known on air that Berger and Eli Isom and Ryan Nova are friends and work together. Cheeseburger helped train them at the dojo and bring them into ROH and stuff. So they've already connected and it makes sense in that way. But the fact that they've now got a team name and they've got matching gear too. I think the main show on Wednesday was the first time we saw them. They came out, they kind of had like matching bandanas. They did a pose in the ring together. And I was like, oh, I like this. Because right away it just defines them more. Especially Ryan Nova, who has gotten like nothing about Ryan Nova, really. Eli Isom's gotten a little bit of attention in the past couple of months, and Cheeseburger is well-established.
Yeah, Ryan Nova is definitely like the third man in this. So we'll have to see what they do with him in 2019. But, you know, Cheeseburgers definitely had storylines throughout of 2018. And Eli Isom is ending this year with on a kind of upswing with the camera on him more often. The commentary team is doing what they can to get his recent, you know, successes, his like really shocking successes over. And yeah, he's being treated more and more as like a legitimate, like, yes, low card, but a more like legitimate performer.
The other, I guess, big news for us coming out of the Wednesday show was that Flip Gordon appears to be perfectly healthy.
Man, I...
Last week on the podcast, we weren't sure because the survival of the fittest bump that he took.
Yeah, I, you know, I probably should have figured that he was probably totally fine. But man, they sold it really well. They did. That was a work that really was really effective. Kudos to everybody. I feel kind of chagrined that I cared that much.
Or he really did. You know, maybe the survival thing really was a misstep and it was a bad bump that wasn't planned and he just was lucky to get out of it unscathed.
That is probably more likely the case. And based on recent tweets of his, he may still need medical attention, which he, I guess, will not be seeking.
All right. I'd say I don't know about my favorite match from Wednesday, but I'd say the biggest surprise was Bully and Silas beating the Young Bucks.
I was kind of surprised there too.
I missed the ending. Because the feed went down. There were issues in the building. Not on ROH's fault. We should stress that because Honor Club's been great the past couple months for me.
Yeah, I've had no complaints with Honor Club. This looked like a actual power outage in Lewiston.
Yeah, actually, the next night they addressed that and they said it was like rolling brownouts throughout the whole city.
Their first time in Maine and last time in Maine.
But it appeared that they might have won due to some sort of low blow. I saw Silas pinning Matt Jackson and I saw Matt holding his crotch. So I put two and two together.
Yeah. I figured it was going into this, I figured they were going to be targeting Matt's back. I figured that there would be your typical Bully Ray shenanigans. I figured if they were going to give the win to Bully Ray and Silas, a low blow would be attached to that. I just kind of assumed that the Young Bucks would get this one by pinning Silas. I've given up hope that Bully Ray will get any kind of comeuppance before final battle. So at this point, if they're in a tag, I figured that Silas is the one eating the pin.
Yeah, and it's so rare that the Bucks lose in ROH. They've lost like maybe three times this year now. So even with a low blow finish, still kind of shocking that they lose to someone, to a team like Silas and Bully.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just I don't know where the Bucks are going heading into final battle.
I don't either. I think that's the point. And at this point, we talked months and months ago about having Bullet Club fatigue. Now I have what's the Elite going to do fatigue. And I'm just kind of like, okay, I'm waiting for the answer.
Wrestling fans, if you're looking for a unique and entertaining way to get your wrestling podcast fix, check out Ring Rust Radio. Ring Rust Radio uses its trademark brand of banter to cover all professional wrestling you love, including WWE, NXT, New Japan, Lucha Underground, ROH, Impact Wrestling, and more. We also hold sit-down interviews with some of the biggest names in the history of the business, such as Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Chris Jericho, Kurt Angle, Trish Stratus, AJ Styles, and Roman Reigns. For those of you who want their wrestling with a perfect mix of serious analysis and comic relief, find Ring Rust Radio dropping every Wednesday night on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Young Bucks versus Shinobi Shadow Squad in a Loser Leaves Town match. It'll be the end of 2018 version of Coast to Coast beating War Machine.
Oh, all right. There you go. who is the Shinobi Shadow Squad tag team? Is it going to be Berger and Eli Isom?
No, it's going to be Ryan Nova and their new recruit, Ryan Nova's younger brother, who's like 13.
Brian Nova.
Yes, Brian, yeah. Well, the next night, night two, they moved on to Lowell, Massachusetts. This was Thursday. And as you alluded to, Dalton Castle and Juice Robinson together at last.
Yes. Yes. So how
with
much
the elaborate entrance.
With an elaborate entrance. Obviously, Juice, under a different name, did some time in NXT. But how much have you seen of Juice Robinson?
Next to nothing. I don't think I've seen him actually wrestle. You know, I've seen him on, like, Being the Elite and stuff. I know Kevin Owens said that he's the best promo in the business. But I haven't seen much of Juice post-NXT.
He has been having quite the year in New Japan. From starting off the year kind of still in, like, your mid-card, tagging with David Finlay primarily, which he still does, to getting a pretty strong storyline with Jay White that led to him getting the U.S. championship, which obviously he lost at the end of September to Cody. But and after kind of a rough G1 too, but like the spotlight's been on Juice in a surprising way. If you'd asked me back in February who the New Japan, who was going to be pushed forward in New Japan, my answer probably would not have been Juice Robinson, but I'm very thrilled that it has been, especially when we end up getting to see him on the Global Wars tour in ROH, because I think he fits really well in New Japan, surprisingly. I think he's a nice, for Gaijins, he's a nice, difference, I guess. He's a different way of having a Gaijin guest in the New Japan roster. But in ROH, he's just very suitable. His flamboyance, he's able to play with it in the same way that Dalton Castle is able to play with his gimmick. And his fighting style, his actual like moves and stuff are very well suited to a lot of the opponents in the ROH roster. So I was thrilled to see him throughout this tour. We will talk about the Toronto show in a minute or two, but I enjoyed this this outing with Dalton Castle. This was a fun tag that I didn't even know I needed until I saw it, and now I need it all the time.
Yeah, I'd say Juice definitely did come across as a big star. Like, he felt the fans were treating him like he was almost like, I don't know, on the level of Naito, but on the level of Sonata and Bushi, I'd say.
Yeah, he's got a lot of fan excitement right now, and I think that it helps that, like, he's done the Best Friends show. So I think ROH fans who dig a little deeper and follow, you know, the ROH talent, like in non-ring appearances, they're more familiar with him too. And there's just, yeah, he's been having a really good year, and he's super, super likable and very memorable. Like, as both an in-ring gimmick and just outside presence, he's just a memorable guy. And I think that he's kind of immediately attachable in that way too.
Yeah. I mean, when he came out in Toronto, my dad said, oh, he's doing a Macho Man gimmick.
He looks so much like Macho Man.
Because of the outfit and stuff, which is not a great first impression. Cause right away my dad was just like, oh, he's just like some like a ripoff wannabe type character sort of thing. Right. And of course there was those handfuls of a-holes in every crowd who were like, we'll chant CJ Parker, that'll be hilarious. But I think he won the majority of the crowd was already behind him, but he won over the others.
And it's funny that your dad had that reaction, because I could kind of see, like, if you didn't know Juice Robinson and you saw that, it would be kind of annoying, like, oh, it's just a Macho Man ripoff. But knowing that he's not really playing a Macho Man-esque character, seeing that kind of that presentation, and I totally agree with your dad, it was very Macho Man-esque. It made me very joyful, because it was like Juice, like, paying homage to Macho Man without actually like really taking on that, like, you know, inhabiting that gimmick in a way that feels cheap.
So then, why was he teaming with Dalton? Why wasn't he teaming with Jay Lethal?
I want to see that at some point. I mean, Juice Robinson seems like a great tag team partner in general, but Dalton Castle and Juice Robinson, I mean, that's...
Yeah, it fit.
Yeah,
super. With the boys pushing them on the podium. And
yes.
Well, we talked about the upset of Silas and Bully beating the Young Bucks. What about Scorpio Sky pinning Jay Briscoe?
That's absolutely nuts.
Again, like, there were circumstances, you know, Kaz and Mark got involved, there were chairs and distractions and stuff, but this was Scorpio's first singles victory of the year. He, even with this victory, he still has the worst record of anyone in ROH. And Jay Briscoe is like a 2-time world champion and was like unpinned for a year and a half or something.
Yeah. Yeah, I never would have thought this would end the way. I mean, I assumed this was going to be a squash match. And then it was like 10 minutes and Sky gets the win. totally crazy. I don't know what they're trying to do, if they're trying to further establish him as a competitor so that when they inevitably, when him and Kaz inevitably face the Briscoes at Final Battle, like, Sky looks all the tougher. I don't know, but I was caught off guard by this.
Yeah, I mean, it might just be another piece in the story there of the SCU Briscoes feud, which I'm sure has not ended yet.
Oh yeah, it goes on and on.
And then speaking of Bully and Silas, so they had a little match against LIJ. They, as we expected on the first night, Sas Young took the pin. And then a little bit of post-match Trouble in Paradise between Bully and Silas.
Yeah, a little bit of, I mean, some ensuing tension there. It's hard to keep track of where they are since they tend to work well together, but then they don't get along. I don't know. That seems to be the case.
Yeah, they hate a lot of the same people, but they're both, like, Saz is just a curmudgeon and Bully's just an a-hole.
Yeah, I mean, Bully,
so it's tough to...
Bully is literally a bully, and Silas is a guy who will, you know, not accept being bullied, but somehow it has been kind of cowed by this guy in one way or another.
Yeah, I just found it interesting that we ended with it unresolved.
Yeah.
Saz wanted to fight, Bully offered a hug, and Saz just walked off. There wasn't any resolution between them. And I want to say we didn't see them together again for the rest of the tour, did we?
Did we see them? Well, no. We get to see Silas on commentary, and he talks a little bit about Bully in Toronto, but there wasn't anything with them in Buffalo.
Oh, in Buffalo, it was Silas against Juice, and Bully came out and kicked Juice between the legs for the DQ.
Oh, okay.
And then Flip came out to the ring, and there was stuff which we'll get to in a minute. But yeah, no resolution between Bully and Silas per se. They didn't appear to be, like, they weren't working together as a unit or anything. It was just I don't know. Maybe that's Bully trying to make it up to Silas, get him back on his side.
Yeah, you know, that's a way to do it. Help your buddy who's mad at you by solving a problem. That problem being the opponent that's in front of them, I guess.
Well, okay, so let's get into that then. Because okay. That was Friday, Buffalo, New York. Bully versus... Not Bully. Silas versus Juice Robinson. Juice looks like he's going to win. He's going up for Pulp Friction. Bully comes out and causes Silas to take the DQ loss. Bully shoves Todd Sinclair to the mat. One of his favorite pastimes.
Yes.
And then Flip Gordon hits the ring. And Flip falls to the numbers, Bully gets the kendo stick, and Joe Koff makes a rare appearance.
Yeah, all mad, steamed up, mad that Bully Ray, of all things, has grabbed a kendo stick.
Yes, after the nonsense that happened on TV a couple weeks ago, where they had to issue a warning, they had to edit down their program to TV because of Bully's actions. He said, if you ever use a kendo stick ever again, you're fired. And Bully walked off in a huff.
Wow. So Joe Koff has a line, and that line is a kendo stick, not chains.
Yes. Bully can whip as many referees with chains as he wants. He can interfere in dozens of matches, low blowing people left and right. But if he ever uses a kendo stick again, uh-uh.
Oh, you know, this actually kind of makes me mad, and I'm gonna kind of be on Bully's side here. Flip and Bully entered basically a contract with the match stipulation, right? Like, Flip had an envelope with what he would do to Bully. Bully had an envelope of what he'd do to Flip. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, they entered an agreement. So while what Bully did was despicable and, like, horrible, what he did was also, like, within the line of the agreement. So, like...
Yeah, more so than attacking the refs.
Right? So, like there's some aspect of this that's kind of making me mad on Bully's behalf in that, like, Bully just did what he was allowed to do, which is to be a horrible monster. But, like, he was allowed to do that through the agreement that he made with a guy who made that agreement willingly, which... you know, you can't say for like every time he shoves Todd Sinclair down the mat, or he like whips a dude with the chain, or he interferes with a match by low blowing a random opponent. Like, those are the, like, that's actually like rule breaking and like disruptive, and like that is like despicable, and also not against people who agree.
Stuff like that is the reason Daniels is worried he's going to be fired next month.
Right.
Because SCU were doing stuff like this a year ago, and Joe Koff said, that's it, like, you're done when your contract's up.
Yeah.
Now Bully's doing the exact same stuff, and Joe's like, yeah, I don't like it. Don't use that stick.
I mean, what is a bulletproof contract?
It's, I think the implication is that it would just cost them way too much money to fire him.
Ah. See, I think they need to, like, they need to up the ante on this storyline that, like, Bully Ray's got, like, dirt on somebody.
Well, that's what Daniels tried to pull back in January.
Yeah.
Daniels was like, oh, you fire me and I'm going to go to Impact and go to NXT and tell them all your secrets and stuff. And Joe was like, no, I'm not. Screw you. Yeah, I don't know. At this point, Joe Koff is an enabler.
Yeah.
And I want, anytime Bully Ray does anything bad, it's Koff's fault, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, right? Like, the next time someone gets choked out by Bully Ray and his chain, like, we can look at Joe Koff and we can say, oh, but it's not a kendo stick, Joe, huh?
And we know, okay, again, skipping ahead, Sunday night, Flip challenged Bully to an I Quit match at Final Battle.
Yeah.
So you know we're building to that moment in that match where Flip gets the kendo stick, he hits Bully a couple times, Bully gets the stick, and he's like, he really wants to hit Flip, but he can't, because if he hits Flip, he's going to be fired, and so he can't do it. Like, I already know where this is going.
Yep. Yeah. Sorry. It's hard to get invested in, like, any kind of restriction for Bully Ray, knowing that, like, it doesn't.
There's too many plot holes like this that takes us out of the moment, right?
Yeah, it takes us out of the reality. The stakes are down because we don't believe that there are any stakes for Bully. At this point, I just want to see him beat. Like, that's the only stake. I don't really care about Jokoff being upset about kendo sticks or even Bully Ray getting fired, because I have no hope that he'll get fired. I just want to see him lose. That's the only stake I believe in.
He will. At Final Battle, he'll take so many kendo sticks that he says, I quit. Flip wins.
Like, it'll just be everybody coming out of Final Battle with kendo sticks.
Yeah, maybe. You get Colt and you get Burger and everybody else just around the ring so he can't run away. Even Silas turns on him.
Yes, everybody, just the entire roster comes out, kendo sticks in hand, surrounding the ring and just, like, beating the kendo sticks against the, like, ring posts and the ropes until, like, Bully Ray is, like, chased out of the building.
Perfect.
Write it, guys. This is it.
Yeah. Well, also confirmed for Final Battle now, it's a grudge match between Matt Taven and Dalton Castle for the real ROH World Championship.
This is delightful. I am so glad that this is what they're doing. An angry, spiteful Castle is a good look for him when it's directed to someone like Taven.
Oh, okay, you talk about Castle and I'll talk about Taven, because the Taven that we saw on Friday in Buffalo was a sociopath.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
The totally new Taven. It started with the haircut. Now he's not even wearing purple. He's just wearing all black, looking like somebody out of, like, American Horror Story. What's that popular one that all the Fight Club fans love? American History X?
Sure, probably.
I was never into that sort of stuff. I wasn't angry enough, I guess.
I wasn't.
You know what I mean? He looks like a sociopath out of a movie who would, like, just be attacking people on the street for fun sort of thing. And the boys got a beating.
Yeah.
They took was it a power bomb onto the exposed concrete?
Yeah.
They got lawn darted into, like, a couple of steel chairs that were wedged up in the corner. Merseglia and TK beat the heck out of the boys. Basically, like, if we see them again before Final Battle, I'll be surprised, because they got such a bad beating that they should be off TV for a while now.
My lips are sealed.
Okay.
Searching for more great pro wrestling talk? Then join me, Jason Powell, host of the free weekly Pro Wrestling Boom podcast. Each week, you'll hear the latest news and analysis from me and my team at ProWrestling.net, along with other Pro Wrestling Media members. Plus, the Pro Wrestling Boom podcast features long-form interviews with notable names in the pro wrestling industry. Subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Downcast, and all your favorite secondary apps, or visit us directly at pwboom.com. Once again, that's pwboom.com.
But, yeah, huge beating, and Taven basically challenged Castle to facing him at final battle for his title, and Castle accepted.
Yeah, I love it. I think it's great. I think it's exactly the type of thing that brings Dalton back into focus, but I love that he's coming back with such a clear focus, because Taven has... The storyline for them is really clear, and I like it. I like that there's not a whole lot of muddiness to this. There's muddiness in the fact that, like, Taven's got this fake belt, and so what that challenge from Castle means as far as this fake title goes is kind of weird. But otherwise, it's a really straightforward thing. Taven's been talking shit since Best in the World, or immediately after Best in the World. He's been talking shit on Castle about having actually won the title from him. Castle's finally back. He's back from injury. He's back with a vengeance. He's back to, like, clear his name. And part of that is defeating Taven, and, you know, getting to have some comeuppance on all the stuff that's been said about him in his absence.
Yeah, and at first I've been saying for months that I thought it was going to be Taven challenging Lethal for the title at Final Battle. I've been thinking since beginning of summer that Taven would be challenging for the world title. But once I thought about it, I was like, oh, well, this makes perfect sense. Like, Taven has no interest in Jay Lethal's title because it's fake. He's already the world champion, so why would he want to challenge Lethal for his fake title, right? Taven's got his own title. He's the world champion. He's got his own title to defend. He doesn't need to concern himself with Lethal.
Precisely, yeah. And the more and more I thought about it, the more it made sense in my mind that, like, that other people would be the ones to take that title challenge at Final Battle. For me, I think that Taven's got I don't know what will happen in that Taven Castle match at Final Battle, because I could see it going either way. But what I would hope for is that Taven, if he loses to Castle, will get, like, a renewed fire towards the, like, legit title.
Oh, I can't see Taven losing his world title in his first defense.
Yeah, but what happens if he keeps that title? Does he ever get, like, an interest in the actual ROH world title?
Yeah, because maybe he just gets sick of Lethal being introduced as the world champion and bragging about being the world champion.
Okay.
And that grinds on him.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. This is the point in our podcast where the Kenny G plays and Rhett Titus walks out on stage in tiny little trunks covered in baby oil.
Okay. Harley,
where is this going?
I love that you're not... feeling, are you not feeling this? Because you are our podcast dog's apologist.
True. Okay. And the first couple of nights when he was on commentary, I loved him being on commentary and Ian and Colt's reactions to Rhett, especially Survival of the Fittest. We got it as well. We're up to, like, he's done this like 4 or 5 times now. There's still the hashtag where's Little Willie. That's a question to be resolved on another day. But yeah, the new Rhett Titus fitness contest winner, Rhett Titus.
Yes, I really enjoyed this.
Is he gonna wrestle like this?
I don't know. I really enjoyed this bit. I really did. I thought there was something kind of great about it. I like that we're getting a different side of Rhett Titus from this, because in addition to being less clothed and more oily, he also was significantly less obnoxious, kind of polite to the guys on commentary, sober seeming. I kind of like this, like, weird non sequitur Rhett Titus, where, like, he's just, like, smooth, scantily clad and oily and kind of nice. Kind of like, he was very nice on commentary. He came in, he didn't overstay his welcome. He flexed, certainly showing off his very fit body, and then left. And there was no, like, drunken hollering. There wasn't, like, hitting anyone up for money. I kind of like this, like, softer side of Rhett Titus.
So what you're saying is maybe all of Titus's bad behavior in the past was just self-esteem issues.
I mean, maybe he had to get...
And now he's feeling so good about himself and his body that he's just like, he's lightened up.
Yeah, I mean, he put down the booze and he looked in the mirror and, you know, he realized that maybe Lil Willie has been an enabler in some ways for him. And, you know, he had to, like, really work hard on his, like, own problems. He had to really face up to his demons. And those insecurities and self-esteem issues were, like, powering all the worst behaviors in him. And once he was able to let that go and be free of that, then he could, like, he could really become the person he wanted to become.
Well, I'm interested to see if he ever wrestles again or if he just shows up on commentary half naked. And what it all means when Little Willie resurfaces.
I think Little Willie is going to resurface, and I think Rhett Titus will backslide. And I think next time we see him, he'll be back in his floral print shirts and loud and talking about the big dog and the little dog and et cetera.
All right. Well, time will tell.
And then the Global Wars, Rhett Titus, will have been just a dream.
Yep. Last couple of things from the Friday show in Buffalo, I guess. Jay Lethal versus Chris Sabin in a Proving Ground match.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking going into this that ROH never does time limit draws anymore. So, you know, Lethal's going to win in like 13 minutes or 14 minutes or something. And like, what's the point? And then they prove me wrong. And I was so happy to be proven wrong.
I called this one, actually. I thought when the match was announced that it was going to go to that time limit draw and that they would immediately go into a match for the actual title. That's kind of what I assumed that would happen. And that's what happened, except that the match for...
So it happened for 8 seconds.
Yes, the match for the title did not get to occur because Kenny King just bent on fucking things up.
Yeah, and I thought that was perfect, the whole segment. Sabin hangs for the champ. Doesn't lose, and they didn't even do like the time ran out and he tapped 2 seconds later. He never tapped at all, so he looked strong throughout.
Yeah,
Sabin looked strong. Lethal looked heroic for saying, I'll give you a title shot right now if you want, let's go another 10 minutes. And then Kenny looks just like a vindictive, petty, jealous, scared person who is like, oh my god, what if Sabin wins the title here, and then does that mean I don't get my title shot on Sunday? Like, I we have to put an end to this. I thought it was perfect all around.
Yeah. Yeah, I was totally happy with that. I'm totally happy with this movement forward because, you know, obviously this tour had a trajectory and that trajectory ended with the main event in Toronto. And that, you know, had to be Jay Lethal and Kenny King. So anything that was standing between King and that trajectory was going to need to be eliminated. For Kenny King, this clear focus totally works. It totally works. It totally works for the audience. I buy into that intensity every time the ante is upped, and that this was like a really good way to do that.
Well, and then that takes us in to Sunday in Toronto. Yes, I was there in person, and it was a good show.
Yeah.
It was a very good show.
I'd say the strongest of the ones that I watched, certainly.
Well, it's in Canada. What do you expect?
Are you saying that Canada
I'm saying Canada is better than Maine. When it comes to wrestling.
All right.
I'm saying our entire country is better than one of your tiny little states.
Okay, Mainers.
Bold statement.
Bold statement. Them's the fighting words. Mainers who listen to Talking Otter, write in with your angry emails.
Yes. No, I attended with my 58-year-old father, lifelong wrestling fan.
Ooh.
He watches ROH TV, but he doesn't watch any of the Honor Club events. So... his perspective was interesting. You know, he didn't know Dalton Castle was back from injury. He didn't know SCU were the tag champions because that hasn't happened yet on TV, even though it's been spoiled many, many times on Honor Club and on social media and stuff like that. So, yeah, it's always fun. It's always fun for me to hear the first-time perspective from people about new wrestlers and stuff.
Yeah, definitely.
So, our opening contest, Women of Honor action, Karen Q versus Toronto's Caitlin Diamond. I'm not familiar with Caitlin, although she's from my hometown.
Yeah, I've seen her in, she's been in a bunch of things. Looking over her, like, her matches on Cage Match, she's been in a couple of, she's been in, like, a variety of promotions, but the one I recognized from her from is one that I follow regularly, which is Pro Wrestling Eve out of the UK. She's wrestled a number of Pro Wrestling Eve standbys there, including Charlie Morgan and Nina Samuels. She was at BCP, where she was defeated by Tasha Steelz recently, who was, you know, in that that match against Sumi Sakai back in September. But yeah, so she's got some pedigree. She's in Smash Wrestling, your local, like, big hometown indie in Toronto.
Yeah, makes sense.
But yeah, that's, I recognized her from Pro Wrestling Eve.
Okay. So she was challenging Karen Q in a qualifying match for the Four Corner Survival match for the Women of Honor World Championship at Final Battle. That kind of tipped things off a bit. It seemed unlikely that Caitlin would be competing at the biggest pay-per-view of the year.
As nice as it was...
for the title in her second match in the company.
Yeah, as nice as it was to see Caitlin and recognize her from other promotions that I follow, it was so weird to me that the qualifying match for this world championship was Karen Q versus Caitlin Diamond, when the other qualifying matches that we're going to see, like, you're going to see Kelly Klein versus Jenny Rose, and Madison Rain had to earn hers against
Britt Baker.
Like, it's just very random. Just very particularly random.
Caitlin Diamond, I guess somebody in ROH sees big things in her, that they put her in the same category as Britt Baker and Kelly and Jenny.
Well, I thought she was very good, and I've seen her do even better in, like, a full, like, match, like a more longer length match in other promotions. So it would be great if they could, you know, better utilize Caitlin Diamond. I just, you know, inevitably was not going to happen here.
No. So Karen picks up the win with the spring roll. She advances to the four-quarter match, assuming Sumi doesn't lose the title before then. We now know it's going to be Sumi Sakai, Madison Rain, and Karen Q confirmed, with one more spot still to be determined on a future episode of television. But then there's some post-match stuff, with which, again, I feel like probably tipped the hand a little.
How so?
Well, okay, so Sumi comes out to, not to confront Karen, that's just to address her as, like, hey, you're going to be challenging me for the title at the pay-per-view. And then Kelly Klein attacks both of them. Madison Rain comes down. And the fact that we have four women brawling a month ahead of a four-corner survival match, and three of the women in the brawl are women who are already confirmed in the match, kind of makes me think that that fourth woman who is out there in the ring is probably going to be the fourth woman in the match.
Probably. Yeah, I will neither confirm nor deny.
But it was good. It was a good segment, though. Like, it got the show off to a hot start. You had security separating all four women. Sumi gets to hit her big top rope crossbody onto all of the security, and Karen and Kelly at ringside.
Yeah.
Yeah. Solid build for the pay-per-view.
Yeah, really. And I mean, I'm not always a fan when they put the Women of Honor match, like, right at the front. But I thought this was a nice way to, like, make it the opening match that, you know, opening matches can be, which is a really, like, great way to jumpstart a card.
Yeah, and speaking of Caitlin, we had one other Canadian contingent on the show, and that is Super Smash Bros. They made their big ROH return earlier this year when Global Wars was in Toronto. Smash Bros. Faced the Young Bucks in a match they didn't win, but they were so impressive and the fans were so behind them that SCU invited them to come challenge them for the titles.
Yeah.
And again, I don't think they disappointed.
No. God, these guys are great. They're super fun to watch. I was curious how they would be against SoCal Uncensored, because where Scorpio Sky is a bit of a flyer, Kaz and Sky don't have the same penchant for big spots that, say, the Bucks have. They can do them, but it's not quite the same. And I was curious how the styles were going to mesh in this one, and turns out just fine. Worked out just well.
Yeah, there was a moment where the Smash Bros got a very good near fall. They hit Evil Uno hit a top rope senton, and then Stu Grayson hit a 450 splash.
Yes.
One after the other. They covered for like 2.5 before I want to say it was Kazarian maybe that they were covering. I can't remember. It's kind of irrelevant. Whomever they were covering kicked out. And that was one of the loudest reactions in the building all night. The fans booed the heck out of the kick out.
That was
not booing SCU in particular, somewhat SCU, somewhat booing the referee, but just booing in general that, oh my God, they didn't win.
Yeah. I mean, that was actually another great thing about this match is that Super Smash Bros. Are really over in Toronto. So it was fun to see SCU have to kind of earn their victory in the face of like not having as much over support as they probably are starting to get quite used to at this point.
Yeah, and I wonder if this will be a recurring thing, and like the next time they come back to Toronto, which will probably be in the spring, will we see Smash Bros again? Will they face the Briscoes next time or somebody else?
Yeah, I would like to see that. I'd like to see a Smash Bros match against the Briscoes. That would be real fun.
Support what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast when you shop Amazon. Simply go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. We've simplified the page. There's a big Amazon logo. You click on it. It takes you right to Amazon's homepage. But because of that small detour, we get credit for your visit, and we get a commission on anything you buy on that shopping trip. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you very much for your support.
Well, all right, I was going to skip ahead, but I'm sure you have thoughts on Beretta versus Juice Robinson.
I mean, for me, this was the match of the night.
That's funny, because it didn't even make my top three.
That's crazy. I mean, granted, this is a stacked card, and so there's a lot of competition there. But wow, I have not seen either of these guys go quite as hard as I've seen, like at least recently, as I saw them go in this match. And I've seen Juice Robinson in, you know, however many matches in the G1. But this was a different level. Every time that this match felt like it was going to finally like culminate, it continued in a way that surprised me, that it felt like it earned its length and its that it earned the amount of time that it spent on the power exchanges in this match really impressed me, because at no point was it clear to me who was going to be the winner. And that also has to do with the stakes themselves, which, so this match was originally, as most people listening and you of course hardly know, this was supposed to be a challenge for the IWGP US Championship title currently held by Cody. Cody gets injured at Buffalo. He can't compete, so he is replaced by Juice Robinson, who happens to be on this tour and also happens to be the guy who Cody took the belt from. So this ended up being a wonderful, happy accident that, like, instead of getting Cody versus Beretta for a challenge, we get to extend the story a little bit longer with Juice Robinson now having claim to be able to challenge Cody to get his title back, which I think is great. But at no point during the match did I think that was a for sure story turn. I think that added an element to the fight itself, because if I had been watching Beretta versus Cody for the actual title, I was going to probably guess that it wasn't going to go to Beretta, pretty sure. But in this case, I had no idea what the finish was going to end up being. And it added a lot to the surprise, to the end of this match. And ultimately, you know, Juice is victorious. And now he gets to, like, you know, properly lay claim to a challenge for the title. But Beretta still can, like, make his challenge if he wants to continue trying to get it, to get an actual shot at the title as well. I really liked this match. I think that Juice and Beretta are really well matched as far as power and striking. Both of them are able to do spots in a way that, like, look authentic to fighting rather than, like, sometimes in tag matches that can kind of seem stiff or a little bit too choreographed. I thought a lot of these stuff had a really, like, nice, smooth, and much more authentic fighting style to it. I don't know. I just love this match. I thought it was great.
Well, my dad only had two comments on this match all in the entire 20 minutes. Both came during the entrances. They were, does Trent not have a first name anymore? And, ugh, I hate best friends. Those are his two contributions.
Well, I understand Harley's dad, and I will respectfully disagree with your assessment of the best friends. But I will say that it is easy to forget that Trent Barretta is a pretty great wrestler if you are watching a best friends match that, like, maybe you just see on ROH TV. I think this was a nice way to see Barretta's skills beyond maybe what we see on average on an average episode of Ring of Honor. This was more reflective to me to what we've been seeing recently with his tags in New Japan since coming back from injury. He had a big tag win recently at Power Struggle, and it was nice to get to see him showcase his singles wrestling ability in this match.
Well, I'm a little surprised that you actually like that match more than the Young Bucks versus Sabin and Kushida.
It just edges out for me. And I think that it edges out for me primarily because of the tension in the match, because I really could not figure out who was going to get the pin.
Yeah, that's fair.
I thought
he can't have Barretta lose. He's going to be getting a title shot in the
right
future.
And Juice Robinson, while, you know, certainly friend and collaborative partner from New Japan, like, he's not in ROH, so I kind of thought they might use this chance as establishing Barretta for both a legit title challenge and as, you know, someone to be contend with in ROH, you know, maybe in the coming months. So there was a lot of, like, surprise there. Whereas I love Kushida and Chris Sabin tagging together. They've very quickly become one of my favorite tags to watch. Obviously, I enjoy the Young Bucks, but watching a Young Bucks...
But you knew Sabin was taking the loss.
Yeah, right. It's funny. Also, watching this match, I realized, well, I like the Young Bucks, I almost never root for the Young Bucks. I'm almost always rooting for the other team against them.
Well, because they're the opposite of the underdog.
Yeah. Right?
They're almost always multi-time champions at the same time and rarely lose. So, yeah, you kind of just, like, you want to see this rise upset, unless it's Bullying Silas.
Yeah. No, I mean, obviously, there's always going to be exceptions, but every time they're in a tag, most often when they're in a tag anymore, I'm thinking, like, oh, I kind of want to see them lose, especially in ROH when they so rarely do, except for when they lose to Bully and Silas, and then I'm pissed off. So there's no pleasing me. So don't listen to me, ROH.
This was definitely, judging by the people in the arena, definitely the crowd's favorite match of the night.
Okay.
Which isn't really a surprise when the Young Bucks are concerned. They got the biggest reaction when they came out. They got multiple This Is Awesome chants. The only other match to get any This Is Awesome chant was the Smash Bros. And SCU.
Yeah. So
there you go.
You have...
Oh, no, that's not true. Lethal and Kenny did.
Because you don't typically follow New Japan, you haven't gotten to see Kushida and Chris Sabin tagged together before this tour. So how did you feel about their work in general, but specifically their work as a tag team against the Young Bucks here?
Yeah, the first couple of nights of the tour, I was like, oh, they're all right. They're a team. But then this match was definitely a quality match. I like that I forgot about the time splitters. So I'm like, oh, right, that this is the whole thing. Is like both of them were tag team partners with Alex Shelley at different points in time.
Mm-hmm.
And now the two of them are tag partners with each other, with Shelley having retired. So that's a fun thing to sort. And it makes it feel like less of a, on the surface at first, I was like, oh, this is kind of like a weird, like, random team. Like they team together just for this, for the World Tag League. Is that what it's
called? They tagged together for Junior Tag League.
Junior Tag League. I was like, oh, they're two singles guys just getting together as a tag team for the tournament. But I thought that they have a real history with each other, and they brought in a lot of the moves, right? They do, like, variations on Made in Detroit and Dream Sequence and some other sort of classic Machine Guns moves.
Yeah, down to even, like, how, like, what their gear looks like, because if you notice, with Chris Sabin, when he's wrestling as a singles wrestler in ROH and elsewhere, he usually wears, like, wrestling briefs, just like black with his, like, kind of a constellation pattern on it. But since tagging with Kushida, he switched to longer, like, black shorts to wrestle in, which is typically what is a style that typically Kushida wrestles in. So, like, it's been fun to see, like, them just kind of merge as a team and pay homage to their shared tag team member, while reinventing those moves to suit their skill sets. It's just a lot of fun to see. And they're so fluid as a tag team, having only just started working together.
Do they have an official team name yet on their part? I know Colt and Ian were throwing some names around.
I think it's now become a joke where they don't.
The Time Machine, the Time Guns.
Most people call them Time
Machine. The Machine Splitters.
Yeah, I would say most people call them Time Machine. There was musings right at the start of Junior Tag League that they were going to go by the term by the word today, because they were like the team of the future today. But I think most people have just taken to calling them Time Machine because it's obviously the best one. Come on, guys.
Sure.
Like, Saban, I know you like to have like 17 different nicknames, and one week you're the Consolation and the next week you're the Warrior Poet, but like, your tag team with Kushida is the Time Machine. Just accept it.
Yeah, Time Machine is like an H.G. Wells name. Saban seems like more of a Jules Verne guy.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I could see that, but I definitely think Kushida is more of an H.G. Wells. And let's just give Kushida this.
Sure.
Kushida gets to stay here. He's a champion right now.
And Saban gets pinned a lot. No, to be fair, he didn't get pinned here.
He did not, no.
No, he tapped out.
He tapped out.
It's a sharpshooter in Canada. It's like you can't beat it. It doesn't matter who. Yeah. It doesn't matter who's doing it. If you do a sharpshooter in Canada, you're gonna win.
This match went on for a while, and there were so many exchanges in this match where I thought like the pin could happen at any moment, or like there could be a submission, that when Saban actually tapped out to the sharpshooter, it happened so quickly that I didn't realize at first that it had happened. And I think, was it the same with the commentary, that they didn't quite get that he had tapped?
I mean, I didn't hear the commentary live in the arena, you'd know better than I would.
Yeah, I think that's what happened. I think that the commentary team, even like, there were one of the three guys missed the fact that that the bell had been rung because Saban had tapped.
Well, that takes us to the main event of the entire Global Wars Tour, with the world title on the line. Something else you and I have kind of criticized in the past is maybe like an overabundance of title matches during past tours, especially in situations where we knew there's no way the champion was losing the title. Mm-hmm. They were more reticent this time around. Lethal defended the title once in the main event of the last show against somebody that he had a heated feud with, and like a credible challenger.
Yeah.
Who's been built up over a couple of months on TV. Not like, you know, it's not like Caitlyn Diamond coming in and getting a title shot or something when we know there's no way she's winning the title. I was fairly certain Lethal was winning, but there's still a far greater chance of Kenny walking away with the title than some other people.
Yeah, I think that they did a nice build because, again, Global Wars had a clear trajectory, and that trajectory was bringing us to Toronto in the main event of Jay Lethal versus Kenny King. And I think that they framed that really well and didn't mess with that by adding other title challenges to Jay Lethal. I mean, yes, we had the Proving Ground match with Chris Sabin that turned into it, but the plot worked, the way that they worked that worked out perfectly for what they were trying to do, which is, you know, keep the focus very clearly on this main event.
Yeah, so the bell rang about 4 minutes before the top of the hour. We were getting into the 3 hour mark, not counting the dark match and other stuff. So I'll admit, I was feeling, you know, tired and a little burnt out by then. 3 hours is a long time for a wrestling show, I feel like.
Yeah.
Especially if there aren't like stories and backstage segments and vignettes, and it's just match. 10 matches, a lot for a card. But they got us back into it pretty quickly, partly due to the shenanigans. Kenny grabbing the title belt and teasing hitting Jay with it, Kenny spitting on Jay, Lethal hitting a lethal injection, and Kenny kicking out, stuff like that. Like, the crowd was back into this firmly. Lots of heckling of Kenny.
Yes.
I don't know if that transpired to TV, because it wasn't like loud like Kenny sucks chants. There's a lot of individuals just constantly yelling things about The Bachelor and things about how much he sucks and he's not a good wrestler and he's terrible and where's your rose and stuff like that.
Honestly, with Kenny King, I think what has been really clarified his opposition as a heel and how the audience has fallen away from him is not so much even like the stray audience, you know, yelling negative things towards him, or even like a chance, but more the fact that when he does something, when he pulls off a big move, when he, you know, pulls off anything, there's a lack of reaction, a lack of support reaction to what he's just done. And that really tells you everything you need to know about how the crowd is feeling about Kenny King.
Rich Fan, formerly of the Primetime Friday Laughcast with Bruce Mitchell here. I want to tell you about my new show, The Deep Dive with Rich Fan. On Saturdays at 6 p.m. Eastern weekly, join us as we dive into a single subject, some weeks as serious as race, gender, and stereotyping in wrestling, to as fun as which IC champs could fit into another era, and anything in between. We'll have guests from inside and outside the Torch family to cover the subject of the week, and of course your calls and emails. Prior to each episode, I'll put out on social media the subject and some notes, places where you can also bone up on the subject of the week if you're so inclined. I'll also devote shows to two of my favorite international promotions, New Japan Pro Wrestling and Progress. All are welcome. No secret handshakes here because Saturday nights on the livecast are officially all right for diving.
Yeah, so I knew I'd like this match because I love Lethal and I like a good singles match with a title on the line and with something at stake and a babyface and a heel.
I was gonna say it falls right into your sweet spot of
all my favorite moments.
Yeah.
So yeah, I dug this match. Kenny kicking out of the Lethal Injection, pretty surprising. That's pretty rare.
Yeah.
And then we got a fun thing where Kenny went for the roll up with his feet on the ropes. Todd Sinclair counted the full 1, 2, 3, and then immediately went, whoa, no, waved his arms frantically before they rang the bell and before Bobby said anything. That was a great moment. And the crowd freaked out when Sinclair hit 3, and then we were, like, so relieved when he waved it off immediately. They didn't go into, like, the full dusty finish. I like that, too. They didn't go into the full dusty finish where Kenny gets the title, and then they review the tape, and then they whatever. Like, immediately Sinclair saw it and made sure to fix it.
Yeah, thank goodness, because I think that if they had done the full dusty finish and there had to be like the running from the behind stage and et cetera, like that would have tried everyone's patience. I think that this was, if you're going to do this, do it quick, do it as cleanly as possible so that you can get the match back on to where it needs to be.
And it went right where it needed to be with Lethal hitting a second Lethal Injection for the win.
Yep.
All right, so you presumably Kenny's back of the line now, right?
Yeah, I'm guessing.
I mean, Lethal's got no shortage of challengers. Even with Dalton and Taven tied up with each other, Cody claims that he's still owed a one-on-one title match. Marty Scurll won Survival of the Fittest. Flip Gordon won the Sea of Honor tournament. Chris Sabin won a Proving Ground match. So I'm not, you probably know who Jay Lethal is defending against at Final Battle. I don't. My best guess at this point is maybe Cody, but there's a chance that Marty cashes in his world title shot early, because if it's either of them in a one-on-one match, I don't know who the other guy faces at Final Battle. Like, Marty has no obvious, unless they go to Hurricane Helms Volume 5.
Oh, God. Yeah. I will not.
Lots of question marks for me going into Final Battle still.
Yeah. All will be revealed, my friend.
All right. And with the amount of people on the roster, like, I'm kind of afraid Final Battle is going to be a 10-match show too. They have to have learned with Supercard of Honor though that people don't want a 4.5-hour pay-per-view.
No, they don't.
There's got to be some way to figure out how to, you know, if you have to leave some people off the card, so be it. We haven't seen Coast to Coast in a month now, like. Some people just get forgotten about and it happens.
Well, they've been really good as of recent pay-per-views, like the big pay-per-views, of keeping things fairly like lean and on time. We'll see if that repeats a Final Battle. They'll have a little bit more leeway. Obviously, Final Battle is a much bigger show than Death Before Dishonor or even Best in the World. So they have a bit more room to like extend themselves however they see fit, but I think you're right. I think that they learned a little bit from Supercard of Honor this past year that, like, they don't necessarily want to use all of that time, nor even all the people that they have at their fingertips. Take the 7 best stories that you can tell or the 8 best stories that you can tell and really just highlight those matches.
Well, in about 2 weeks on television, we'll start to get a sense of where things are going towards Final Battle. Because unfortunately, this week's TV and next week's are kind of like kind of dated because all the big developments are building to stuff that Global Wars and Survival of the Fittest have already spoiled for us.
Yeah.
Well, like our main event on TV this week, right? Lethal Gresham and a Mystery Partner against the Kingdom.
Ooh.
And
who can it be?
For the crowd in attendance, it was a Mystery Partner, and they popped huge when Dalton Castle came out for his first match back from injury. Unfortunately for us, it's like I've already watched him wrestle on the Jericho Cruise and in Survival of the Fittest and on a couple of nights of Global Wars. So when he comes out on TV, it's like, oh yeah, it's Dalton.
Yeah.
This isn't like a huge like Mystery Partner. It's, you know, Sandman was a bigger surprise than this.
Sandman was a big surprise. Yeah, this one wasn't, you know, as big of a surprise. And honestly, if you were thinking about it as an audience member, you were likely to guess who this mystery guest was. But, you know, I still think, you know, the surprise wasn't necessarily there, but it was kind of fun to see Jay Lethal like tease it out. And it was fun to see Dalton make his like episode entrance in the big, you know, formal way that we hadn't gotten to see until this Global Wars tour. So, there is something to be said though for kind of the lack of surprise. It's unfortunate.
Yeah, like if this episode had aired before, like 2 weeks ago before Survival of the Fittest and Global Wars, I thought this would have been a really strong episode of TV. It would have been a big surprise for Dalton to return. We would have got the first tease of the Dalton Taven stuff instead of getting like the first tease after the vicious attack on the boys that we saw two nights earlier sort of thing. As it was like, yeah, it was an okay TV main event, but it felt it got undercut because of that. And same with the SCU segment.
Yeah. Well, the SCU segment was more like, so that's how it happened.
Yeah. Cause when we found out, you know, when they posted on social media and on all the various pay-per-views that Kaz and Sky were the tag champs, we were like, Kaz and Sky, not Daniels and Kaz? That's weird. And then this week on TV, we finally find out why. It's because Daniels got attacked by the Briscoes and suffered some sort of injury. Not too bad of an injury. I mean, he wrestled in Survival of the Fittest on Global Wars, so he's back to health already.
Yeah, but whatever it was, took him out long enough so that...
took him out for 1 week.
for 45 minutes.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, I don't have too much to say about that SCU segment because we already know how it turns out.
I honestly don't have a ton to say about most of this episode because, you know, some of the major highlights here are, as you have identified, already kind of been spoiled. So not a ton to say about SCU, not a ton to say about the main event.
Cobb and Taylor. Good match.
Good match.
I wanted to see more, so that's always the testament, right? If a match ends and I'm like, oh, I wish they had like another 5 minutes.
Yeah, me too. I love seeing Shane Taylor against a guy who can really go, because I think we have seen Shane Taylor in a fair amount of squash matches. We've seen him in some tag matches where I think he's been really engaging. I still think very fondly of the four-corner survival match that he was in with Gresham and Sabin and someone else. I have come to really enjoy watching Shane Taylor wrestle, provided that he's given an opponent who is can meet him and or surpass him. And, you know, we certainly saw that here with Jeff Cobb.
An opponent who can hold Shane Taylor up in a delayed vertical
suplex. Oh my God, how pretty. How pretty.
What's Shane, like 363 pounds?
Yeah, but also like an opponent who who Shane Taylor can give a like Cleveland Destroyer to and then clothesline. Oh, yeah. And by doing that just looks like incredibly strong.
Yeah, if Shane Taylor gave a Canadian Destroyer to Gresham or Cheeseburger, they'd be dead.
Yeah. To Cobb, and Cobb didn't no-sell. Cobb definitely took that, and then he clotheslined him. And then, you know, Jeff Cobb was able to recover long enough to you know, get the win. But, you know, Shane Taylor held his own and was able to pull off some things that, like, on a weaker opponent would have definitely looked, you know, would have had this match finishing much, much, much faster.
Yeah, after Final Battle, we're definitely going to be dedicating a lot of time on the show to, you know, maybe get some sort of like 2018 awards for ROH. Also, like some resolutions, things we want to see in the new year, stuff like that. And I think one of those categories is definitely going to be people we'd like to see maybe pushed more, like done more with next year. And Shane Taylor is definitely in the running for me.
Yeah. As long as, I mean, I think that there seemed to be a moment where we couldn't get away from Shane Taylor. Like Shane Taylor was in every episode, or he was in every other episode at least. But that wasn't necessarily using him in the best way possible, because with Shane Taylor, like, I'm fine with less is more if every time we see him, there's a, you know, more to go with.
Yeah, he is a good utility player, but I think, like, he could be built up as a credible challenger where him and Cobb face off again in the spring in a feud or in 15 to 20 minute matches, and it could be compelling.
Yeah, I'd like to see him get a legitimate feud instead of just kind of being like a, you know, a glorified like jobber to the stars.
Well, our other match on this week's TV was, again, this was before they had a name and a brand and a makeover, but it is the Shinobi Shadow Squad. Burger and Isom, accompanied by Ryan Nova, taking on the Bouncers. A couple of interesting things here. Bunch of little backstage things.
Yeah.
We had, they're doing the standard on standing next in front of the ROH banner, talking about their opponents. This happens every week. Malonis was trying to keep him focused on Burger, Isom, we're coming for you. Bruiser was just like distracted, not paying attention. Then Malonis can't find Bruiser. He finally finds him. He's alone at the bar, just drinking by himself. And Bruiser is like melancholy. He's depressed about Silas abandoning them and walking out on them last month.
Yeah, I mean, who knew at this point in 2018 we'd be getting some character development for Beer City Bruiser? But here it is.
Yeah, and I love it because we never really got any sort of epilogue to Silas walking out on them. Silas has been hanging out with Bully. The Bouncers had a couple of matches on Global Wars and stuff, but it was never like brought up or whatever, like what it means for their relationship. Are the Bouncers still heels? It's not clear. And it makes sense that Bruiser is going to be hit harder than Malonis, because him and Silas were together for a long time before Brian even came to ROH.
Yeah, that makes total sense that, like, you know, Brian would kind of just, like, Malonis would just kind of shrug it off while, you know, BCB is still kind of wondering what happened to his friend.
Yeah, and Ian did a good job of pointing out, like, we've seen kind of a softer side from them recently, and sure enough, like, Survival of the Fittest, a couple of the Global War shows, Bouncers lost, and after the match, they brought beers in the ring, and they, clinked beers with their opponents, and they all drank together, with the Briscoes, with SCU, Dalton and Juice. So it's like, oh, well, that kind of explains things too, then. Like, so I wouldn't say the Bouncers are baby faces now, but they're definitely less heelish now that they're like a little bit more, I don't know, they're more friendly. They're just more, I don't know how to describe them. I'm intrigued though.
Yeah, I mean, they're going through like an attitude change. I definitely, like you said, wouldn't say that they were full baby faces, but, you know, they're operating in kind of a tweener ground now where, like, you know, if they're going up against guys who they have respect for, they're going to like deliver that respect back. But then we see this match with what they go into with Isom and Cheeseburger, and, you know, they're not really like underhanded or anything, but they're definitely not serving these guys beers afterwards.
Yeah, they were focused.
Yes.
On actually winning, on actually wrestling for once instead of drinking.
Yeah.
They weren't overly aggressive or mean. They weren't cheating. They were just out there to win.
Yeah, and it works out. It works in favor of their wrestling, too, because, you know, honestly, I really enjoyed watching them, watching the combination of Eli and Cheeseburger and, you know, their size and their speed and their agility take on these larger dudes who, while they don't have the speed or the agility, like, they definitely have a size advantage, and that they were able to work it really well in this match. The final combo of Malonis' closing time on Isom and then the crossbody from Beer City Bruiser, like, with a pin on Isom, like, that looked really good.
Yeah, the superplex and the frog splash.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, closing time. Always looks good. They just don't get a chance to do it very much, and they haven't had a chance to do it very much recently.
Yeah, I think that, you know, this whole Silas like subplot with them works in both emotional like character development, but also allows them to, you know, get a chance to really wrestle.
I'd be totally down for like a month or two of the Bouncers versus Silas and Bully come January.
Oh, see, I would love to see that. I felt like we might end up seeing that at some point after Silas like stalked off and left his friends high and dry, and then there was no consequences from that as far as from Beer City Bruiser and Brian Malone. So I think the Bouncers are owed a little match here.
Yeah, we could definitely circle back to that. It would give the Bouncers, especially if it's like a feud, not just one match, it would give them a chance to show some more personality and bounce off of strong personalities that Silas and Bully have.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cool. Well, that was this week's TV. Outside of that, we had a Marty Scurll promo for next week, talking about his feud with her. I forgot that this is still going on, his feud with Hurricane.
Yeah.
It's been kind of convoluted, this whole thing.
I mean, he starts off this promo by saying that he's stuck in the storyline, and I literally wrote like stuck is the right way of call it, a right thing to call it. This needs to end. Can we end this now? Like, please end this story.
Well, next week's a no disqualification match, so I'm guessing that is the end.
Okay, cool. Unless we get the no DQ, I quit match.
Sure. Also next week, SoCal Uncensored win the tag titles.
Wait, spoiler? Harley.
Over the Briscoes and the Young Bucks in a triple threat match.
Wait.
So we still don't know how it ends.
We didn't even mention, too, this is just stepping back for a second, but we didn't mention at the end of Cobb versus Shane Taylor that, you know,
Hangman.
That we are setting up a whole storyline with Cobb and Hangman.
Yes, I was kind of thinking about this before, right? Because Hangman had the backstage thing a week or two ago where he said he wants championship gold. Doesn't matter what it is. It'll be a hell of a match at Final Battle.
Yes, I am looking forward to this. I will not say anything about appearances made at the TV taping, but I can assure that there is more to come. But this segment was notable for me because it played on one of my favorite. I kind of love when two guys who are challenging each other and they're staring each other down and they're like, you know, they're on the verge of fighting, but they're broken up by security and they're briefly united in taking on a common enemy, which is the very authority that is preventing them from killing each other. So it's one of my favorite tropes. It doesn't happen that often, which is good because it would get tiresome, but I do love when security interferes and then the security guards are, they receive the vengeance of the wrestlers that they are stopping. I enjoyed this version of it.
But didn't you feel bad for the last guy? Like the four of them, fine. And then the last guy is just like scared out of his mind, cowering in the ropes.
Hey, you should have let them just fight.
Like when Cobb attacked him there, I felt bad. And I was kind of like, well, Cobb's being a dick here.
I kind of loved it because I mean, Cobb is playing kind of a complicated mix of things right now in his character because he's got like a code of honor. He is gracious towards, like, you know, the low card guys, the younger guys. It does not stop him from trying to win any match. And I think that this like element of like wrathful, like blinds, like this wrathful single focus is an interesting thing to throw in the mix. So like Hangman stalks off, Cobb still has this like angry energy to work off. So who's he gonna work it off on? One of the guys who's responsible for not letting him, you know, letting him fight Paige to begin with. I don't know. I thought it was cool. Well, it was good.
All right. Well, that's next week. We got the triple threat for the tape titles. We got Skrull Helms Volume 4. That should be the last taping from Philadelphia, I think. And then we're heading into the tapings that you were at.
I think this is this is number 2. Next week will be number 3, and then the week after will be number 4, and then we'll be in the Pittsburgh tapings.
But the following week after that, that means that you've only got like 1 or 2 weeks of like 1 week of TV before the pay-per-view.
I'm wondering if...
Because December 14th is coming up pretty quick.
Because there's that... I mean, unless they only filmed 3 episodes at Philly, there's definitely should be two more.
Let's see, there's we've only got 4 weeks of TV between now and the pay-per-view.
Okay, so there'll be two more Philly and then two Pittsburgh. Oh.
That's going to be quick.
Interesting.
All right, lots, so many questions about the weird taping schedule.
So many questions, so many things that are popping into my brain now from the TV taping that make more sense because, okay, never mind.
That you think, you think you saw some post-match, some post-final battles?
I don't want to say anything. I don't know I don't know what I saw. I don't know what I've seen.
Fair enough.
Quit your questioning.
All right, well, our next stop, aside from TV, is Final Battle. In the meantime, if you have any questions, thoughts, concerns, if you were in attendance at any of the Global War shows and want to send us your live perspective, talkinghonor@gmail.com. Let us know what do you think of the Shinobi Shadow Squad. Let us know what you call the tag team of Chris Sabin and Kushida. Who you want to see Super Smash Bros. Face the next time ROH comes to Canada. And... well, what do you make of the bouncers? Are they just big teddy bears and they're just waiting to be loved?
I mean, doesn't that look nice to get a hug from the bouncers?
No, I feel like it. No,
Before the match, when they're not
like a big sweaty teddy
bear. Speaking of bouncer sweat, at the TV taping, this is on public record, so I don't feel like this is a spoiler. At the TV taping, one of the things that they taped is what is becoming a tradition, which is a 10-man like mystery man match. And through this, they got
Christmas surprise.
So they wear Christmassy things. And I'm going to give away a little thing. One of the guys is Brian Malonis, and he was wearing reindeer ear horn things, reindeer antler, like a headband, which he tossed off into the audience, landing right at my feet. So now I am the proud owner of a formerly sweaty, now it has been baked in, reindeer headband from Brian Malonis, and I have no idea what to do with it.
You have antlers from the human strip mall Brian Malonis.
I have the antlers of the human strip mall Brian Malonis, correct. They do have his DNA in them still, likely from the sweat. I don't know if I should wash it or if I need to keep it as is to preserve the chair. I don't know. If you are out there and you have received some sweat imbued item from a wrestler, please let me know what you did with it. Like, did you wash it? Did you try and get them to sign it? Like, I've never been in this position before.
Yes. That's on Twitter, @ForkedPG.
Yes. Also, visit my new site, all about intergender wrestling. It is linked on my Twitter account. It's called Boy Girl Party. We just got going. We are focused entirely on the wonderful and wild world of intergender wrestling.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, this show can be ad-free and commercial-free with a VIP membership. VIP members not only enjoy all 7 episodes of the PW Torch Livecast with no commercials and the ads and plugs edited out, but they also get ad-free additions to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post-shows and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. Also, part of a VIP membership and exclusive shows such as the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, the 3 times a week Bruce Mitchell audio show, including a new weekly mailbag edition with Bruce, The Fix with Todd Martin that I also host, post-pay-per-view roundtables that I host, and other shows on specific topics, including the new Talking Honor podcast with Lola and Harley discussing the latest in ROH, including a review of the latest TV show. And now we are proud to announce that Alan Cunahan, known as Alan4L, has brought his talents to PW Torch after many years at The Observer, and there's a lot of excitement about his new weekly show called Alan4L's Pro Wrest Paradise, with the best coverage of New Japan, all of Japan, the UK indie scene, including the US indie scene. So be sure to become a PW Torch VIP member for as little as $8.25 a month on average, and have multiple new VIP exclusive and ad-free podcasts every day on customizable feeds on your iPhone and Android device. For more information and our sign-up form, go to pwtorch.com/govip, and you'll find out what else comes with VIP membership, including a weekly newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter that started it all, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop sites, and more. Full lineup, full details, and the sign-up form at pwtorch.com/govip.